don't, we want to start this evening and probably for the rest of the summer, look at 1 Samuel. And you may ask why we're looking at 1 Samuel. Well, that just happens to be the book that I'm studying right now. Actually, I'm just about finished studying it in my personal Bible study. So I have a lot of thoughts about 1 Samuel. And what I would like to do this evening, more than anything else, is simply introduce the book. And maybe if you want to, you can, through the summer, read through the book. It might help you. But I thought it might be good to maybe start by just asking you to get you thinking about what exactly is in 1 Samuel. Who are the major people in 1 Samuel? Who's in? Well, we read about one of them just now. Who was that?
Hannah.
Hannah, and her song was about the birth of who?
Samuel.
Samuel, okay. Who else is in the book of 1 Samuel?
Eli.
Eli, good. Who was Eli? He was the high priest and a judge.
And his two terrible sons.
And his two terrible sons.
David.
We're introduced to David in 1 Samuel.
Saul.
Anybody else that comes to mind?
Jonathan,
good. Jonathan was Saul's son. And another couple that I want to talk about who are significant are Nabal and Abigail are up here in 1 Samuel. What events take place in 1 Samuel? What are some of the events that take place in 1 Samuel? This is like Bible trivia to see if you know what's in 1 Samuel.
The ark is taken.
Okay, the ark is taken by the Philistines to the temple of Dagon, and then it's returned. Okay, they established a kingdom. Good, that's really kind of the theme almost. What else? What famous story is in 1 Samuel?
David and Goliath.
David and Goliath, okay. So that gives you kind of a sense for what is in the book. But let me give a little bit of a systematic overview of the book, and maybe that will help. The book, actually, I should point out that 1 and 2 Samuel actually originally, apparently, were one book. In the oldest Hebrew manuscripts, it's just Samuel, and 1 and 2 Samuel put together. It was apparently the translators of the Septuagint that split it into 1 and 2 Samuel, and ever since then, in every version, including the Latin, including the Hebrew and everything, it's always been now 1 and 2 Samuel. But it was originally one book. But 1 Samuel itself covers about 100 years, technically about 94 or 95 years, from the birth of Samuel which is about 1105, to the death of Saul, which was about, I want to say about 1011 BC. So it covered, that's the time frame. It's about 95 years is the time frame of 1 Samuel. And it covers, the main theme of the book is really what Felice said. It's a transition. It's a book of transition from Israel being what? What was Israel before Saul?
Under
the judges. Sometimes it's called a theocracy. In other words, it was actually, the picture was really that who was their king?
God.
God was their king. The Ark of the Covenant was the throne room. That was the throne room of the king. That was the picture. And so it was like, this is the movement from a theocracy to a monarchy. And so you have really, in the book of Samuel, you have the last judge and the first king. In fact, that's probably an easy way to remember a brief outline of the book. It's nice to take a book and divide it into two or three parts to help you get a hold of the book. In 1 Samuel, if you look at the first seven chapters, you can say that's the last judge, which was who? Samuel. And the first king from chapter 8 to chapter 31 is Saul. And that makes for a nice outline of the book. And that's kind of what takes place. So that really what you have in the first part of the book is really the end of the book of Judges almost. I mean, you could almost look at it that way. When you read the book of Judges, there are 12 judges in the book of Judges. But there are at least two more in the book of 1 Samuel, who are Eli and Samuel. And in fact, most likely, there's overlap. Samson was probably lived during the time of Eli, and it's not like a total. There is overlap between the judges and between probably the judges in 1 Samuel. So that this is really almost a continuation at the beginning of the book of the book of Judges. And the book of Judges, how is the book of Judges described? Everybody did what, there was no king in Israel, but everybody did what was right in their own eyes. So that's really that's what you're coming into when you come into 1 Samuel, the first few chapters, you're coming into that kind of a setting. Yes?
During the judges, was there one judge at the time, or there were many judges at the same time?
That's a good question, because the period of the judges is about 330 years. We know that when we put the dates together with, like, we know when the Exodus was, and we know when the kings reigned, and there's only so much time between there, and it's about 330 years. If you go through the book of Judges, and it talks about, and you add up all the years, it's way past three, it's like 400 or 500 or something. So that there is overlap. But it's not real clear. I mean, you can work it out, but it's not real clear from the text itself what the overlap is exactly. But there were different judges apparently operating at the same time, perhaps in different places. Yeah. Yeah. So, and if you look at the judges, there are almost, most of the tribes are represented in the judges. But that's the chronology of the judges is a fascinating subject in and of itself. So, let me just review briefly the order of events in 1 Samuel. It begins with the miraculous birth of Samuel. And we're going to look, we'll look at a little bit of that next week, actually. We'll look at Hannah. But and then, after the birth of Samuel, you have really the judgment on Eli. Eli was a judge, and he had two sons, as Barb mentioned, that were wicked, Hophni and Phinehas, and they were both wicked. In fact, they were so wicked, I mean, they were laying with the women at the tabernacle. That's how wicked they were. But they were getting fat off of the offerings. They were taking the meat from the people before they burned the fat. I guess because the fat tasted good. That's how I understand it. And they were fat. They were overweight. Eli was fat, and he was fat because he was eating all these. You know, he was eating this fat from the offerings that he wasn't supposed to eat. It was supposed to be offered to the Lord. They weren't supposed to eat the fat. But at any rate, they were wicked, and God judges Eli. And that takes place in the beginning of the book, after the birth of Samuel, even as Samuel is a prophet and is established as a prophet. And then we have the judgeship of Saul, and then immediately, and in that period is when the ark is taken in a battle with the Philistines. The ark is taken by the Philistines to the temple of Dagon, and then it's taken from city to city because of the plagues that are on the Philistines, and then finally they return it to Israel. Well, at that time, soon after that, after another battle with the Philistines, and after Samuel's sons begin to judge, and they aren't apparently honest, so the people request a king. And that's in chapter 8, that the Israelites request a king. And, of course, they give him a king, and that first king is Saul. And God chooses Saul. And you have this from about chapter 9 through chapter 12, you have the choosing of Saul, and he actually starts out very well. He rescues Jabesh Gilead and calls all the people together and goes and rescues this city. And then they make him king, and everybody's happy, and he starts out really well. And then from chapter 13 to 15, we have what I call the failure of Saul, his disobedience. He offers sacrifices when he's not supposed to at Gilgal. And then, of course, in his disobedience in regard to the Amalekites, God tells him to go destroy the Amalekites. And he, what does he do? He does it in part. He does it all except for the king and for, and he was supposed to destroy all the animals, but he saved the best animals for sacrifice. And at that point, that's kind of a turning point in the book, because from chapter 16 on, in chapter 15, Samuel tells Saul that he has been rejected by the Lord, and that his dynasty will end. And so from that point on, we see Saul is almost a schizophrenic. Honestly, if he were alive today, Saul would be diagnosed with something. I'm not sure what. It would be bipolar, schizophrenic, something. But if you read Saul, it's a fascinating study to consider what he's like after that point. He's double-minded to the nth degree. And so we will look at Saul. But at any rate, from that, David is then anointed in chapter 16. He's anointed to be the next king, and he's just a boy. He's just a teenager. But he's waiting all the rest of the book. He is waiting for the Lord to basically bring an end to Saul's kingdom. And so Saul is jealous of David through that whole period and is trying to kill him and chasing him all over the wilderness. And finally, at the end of the book, Saul is killed and dies in battle along with his sons, all except for one, Ishbosheth. And that's how the book ends. And then, of course, the 2 Samuel is all about David's reign. But this is about really the decline of Saul and the rise of David in the second part of the book. But as you look at the book itself, and this is what I want to emphasize throughout this study, as you look at the book itself, there are two strong themes that come out, and this is what I want to emphasize as we go through this. And I'm not saying that this is the theme necessarily or the only theme, but as I've read through it many times over the last few months, this sticks out to me more than anything else. That the Song of Hannah, as we read the Song of Hannah this morning, it almost forms in my mind a paradigm for the rest of the book. That the rest of the book is almost an illustration of what she says in this song. And it is about the sovereignty of God. The sovereignty of God in the affairs of man, whether it's individuals or whether it's kingdoms. But look what Hannah says in chapter 2, verse 6. This is kind of the center. And I can't help but see a little chiasm here in her song. But the center of it is verse 6 and 7. And this is almost like, I would say, in a sense, the theme of the book, or certainly a theme. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and rich. He brings low. He also exalts. And so you have this throughout the book. As you look at all the people in the book, you find that this is true. The Lord exalts and the Lord brings down. The Lord kills and the Lord gives life. And of course, the first example is Samuel himself, who was born. The Lord gave Samuel. And you see this as you go through the whole book, that the Lord lifts people up and he brings them down. And you see the sovereignty of God, not only in the lives of people, but also in the battles and in the conflicts with the Philistines. So you have this theme throughout the book. And then you also have the corresponding theme, which you see, and that is the responsibility of man. And so that you have the call for man to be humble, and the call for man to be obedient, and the call for man to submit himself to the Lord. And so you have that as well. And so throughout the book, you have these little, for lack of a better word, do you know what an aphorism is? Almost like a proverb, like a short saying. As you go through the book of Samuel, I was actually it kind of impressed me. I never really thought of it before, but there are these little sayings throughout the book that kind of bring these themes together. Let me give you examples. In chapter 2, in verse 30, there was a prophet who came to Eli to announce his judgment on Eli, God's judgment on Eli. And this is what he told Eli. He said, "Therefore the Lord God of Israel declares, I did indeed say that your house and the house of your father should walk before me forever, but now the Lord declares, far be it from me." And then he gives this saying, almost a proverb. "Those who honor me, I will honor, and those who despise me will be lightly esteemed." You see that come true, not only in the life of Eli. You see that come true in the life of Hannah. You see that come true in the life of Saul, in the life of David, in the life of Abigail, in the life of Nabal. You see all of them exhibit that truth. Those who honor the Lord, he will honor. Those who despise him, he will lightly esteem. Or another one, for example, in chapter 14. This is what Jonathan said. Do you remember when Jonathan and his armor bearer went up alone and conquered the Philistine garrison in chapter 14? And this is what he said to his armor bearer. It's the end of verse 6 in chapter 14. "The Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few." And again, you see the sovereignty of God here. That it's the Lord who lifts up, it's the Lord that brings down. He doesn't need many people. He can do it with many or he can do it with few. And you see that throughout the book. That you see the sovereignty of God displayed in the battles and in the lives of these people. Or chapter 17, verse 47, when David was speaking to the Philistine, or to Goliath, and verses 45 through 47 are all that he said, but I look at verse 47. He says that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's. Again, it's the sovereignty of God. That he is the one who determines the victor of the battle. He is the one. He doesn't save by sword or spear. I thought it's interesting. You would expect him to say that, in that phrase, he says, the Lord does not save deliver by sword or by spear, you would expect him then to finish with by saying what the Lord does save by, but he doesn't. He simply says the battle is the Lord's. The Lord determines the outcome of the battle. It doesn't matter who has what in regard to equipment. The Lord, it is the Lord's outcome. It's the Lord's sovereign determination. And you have these throughout the book. Another one that you see that is illustrated through the book is chapter 16. And again, this is one you've, I'm sure, heard. In verse 7, when Samuel was choosing David or anointing David, the Lord told Samuel, he said, "Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." And again, you see throughout the book that this is in fact what the Lord does. The Lord sees the heart. The Lord truly does see the heart of Hannah, of Eli, of Saul, of David, of Abigail. In all these cases, the Lord looks upon his heart. So as you look at all these individuals throughout the book, You see these illustrated, these little sayings in relation to God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. You see them illustrated in the lives of these people. So what I want to do over the coming weeks, Lord willing, is I want to look at the individuals in the book. I can't go verse by verse through 1 Samuel over the summer on Wednesday nights, but what I'm going to do is look at the individuals and do kind of character sketches, I guess. And looking specifically at that, at those principles, but beyond that, looking at these people, because there are these contrasts of people as you go through the book. You have Hannah and Penina. Penina was the wife, the other wife of Elkanah, and you have this contrast. Hannah was barren. Penina had many children, and Penina was, she's called her adversary. in the book. And in the end, the Lord lifts up Hannah and gives her children. And that's kind of how the book starts. But you have this contrast between Hannah and Peninnah. And the Lord lifts Hannah up. And then you have the contrast between Eli and Samuel. And the Lord brings down Eli and lifts up Samuel. And you have Eli is not faithful, Samuel is faithful. And then you have the obvious contrast of Saul and David. And that is maybe the most fascinating one. Saul is still, to me, in many respects, an enigma. And we'll look at Saul. Saul's been an enigma to me ever since I began reading the Old Testament. But we'll look at him. But they are a contrast. Some of the things that it says of David in this book are fascinating. Some of the ways in which it describes David. And of course my favorite, I think, is in chapter 18. It says this several times of David, but it says he behaved himself wisely in all his ways and the Lord was with him. And a great summary of David in 1 Samuel. So we'll look at those two. And then the other one that is often overlooked, but I think is also equally as interesting, is Nabal and Abigail. Do you remember who Nabal was? Who was Nabal?
Fool.
He was a fool. That's what his name means. Yeah, Abigail's husband. What did he do? What's that?
He was a farmer.
Yeah, he was a farmer, and David came. Remember, David's men were helping watch over his sheep, and when he sent him to the shearers, David sent men to ask if he could have some payment for watching over them, and he sent them away empty. And Abigail, David was going to come back and completely destroy them all, and Abigail came out. And that speech that Abigail gives to David is one of the most fascinating parts of 1 Samuel. It's absolutely impressive. So we'll look at that. Nabal and Abigail form a contrast in how they respond to David, who is a type of who?
Christ.
Which you see throughout this book, that David is a type of Christ. So that's what we're going to do. Lord willing, next week, we're going to look at Abigail. Or not Abigail, I'm sorry, Hannah. And this song, which we could spend all summer in the song, because there's an awful lot of information in the song. But we'll look a little bit at Hannah and her circumstances and the song that she starts the book out with, which actually forms almost like an introduction to the book, the song does. So, any questions or thoughts or comments? But I would encourage you, if you're able, and maybe make it a part of your quiet time or whatever, to read 1 Samuel, and maybe even, you know, like this week, if you can read the first couple chapters of 1 Samuel, it'll help refresh your memory. And then we'll look at that next week. Okay, well let's go to prayer requests.